everyone, this is Matt Koss from TSN 1050, and you're listening to the Pro Sports Podcasters.
Welcome all sports fans. On this podcast,
no sport is left behind.
I'm Justin Williams.
I'm Cabrera Ron, and this is our brother from Down Under.
Me, Wallace Bruce.
We are the Pro Sports Podcasters,
filling you in on the latest news from the world of sports.
Welcome back to the Pro Sports Podcasters. On today's episode, we're going to talk about a topic that came up sort of spontaneously. Me asked Justin and I why it is that fans of the Toronto Maple Leafs can remain so dedicated to a franchise that fails to deliver on promises of success over and over and over again. And even though they continuously fail and haven't won a playoff series since 2004, the fans just seem to be okay with that and remain faithful to the franchise. This came up randomly during one of our conversations. We recorded the entire thing because we were actually planning on talking about something else this episode. But this was so interesting at the time that we decided to go with it as today's episode. Hope you enjoy it.
I have zero for the Leafs. I don't get the obsession.
Yeah.
I'm not here for it. I mean, at least Montreal, they might have won one in Justin's lifetime. But even then, 1993 is a long time ago. A long time ago. And then
I wasn't born.
Okay. I had a feeling you might have been born after that. But anyway, that was more for us.
It's ridiculous.
This thing with the Leafs, 1967. Let me say it again. 1967.
Yep.
And for what?
Pathetic is the word.
The way they are lauded and put on a pedestal and given this air of reverence, for what? You couldn't get out of the North Division. You couldn't get past Montreal. You were 3-1 up and you could not get past Montreal. Get out of here. Get out of here with this obsession with the Leafs. I am done with it. I am absolutely done with it in this city. Toronto FC has won. The Toronto Raptors have won.
Yep.
Let me say it again. The Toronto Raptors have won the NBA title. Never would have seen that coming.
The Toronto Maple Leafs have the most corporate sponsorship of practically any team anywhere. There are major corporations in Toronto that have had season's tickets and private booths to the Leafs forever. Hockey is still Canada's game. So because of that, the support for them at all levels is huge.
The Leafs and why they sucked until essentially the 90s. And I mean sucked in like a bad way. Like they suck now, but like worse. They changed ownership in 1961 to a guy by the name of Harold Ballard. And he was just, oh my God, Ballard fucked him so hard. You weren't allowed to buy alcohol in the stands. It was only popcorn and like Coke or something. Hmm. Right? Like it was really like, just to show you. And if he didn't like you as a person and you were a player, he would trade you for pittance, like literally nothing. Hmm. I'm drawing a blank on the name of the person he traded, but he ripped the C off of his chest and refused to wear it while he was under this guy's control.
Wow.
There was also criminal accusations and everything. It was just a very poorly run team from 1961 until 1990. So the 1967 win is actually amazing. They shouldn't have done that. But also it was a different time. So considering that new ownership took over in the 90s, there was a lot of stuff they had to rebuild. Also, the cap era switched a lot of shit going on as well. Now, you can't argue that, yeah, people have won with the cap. That's great. Congratulations. But the issue with this is Toronto was still paying off debts to other people that they owed money to from like backhanded corruption that was Ballard. So it's only within, I would say early 2000s maybe, when they kind of became scot-free and then everyone else took over like MLSE and stuff like that. Well, shouldn't say took over then, but when it, like a new hope started happening. You can say the resurgence in the late 90s was good too, and it was. It really helped the Leafs. But this is the first time the Leafs have essentially been dominant under a clear organization that's not trying to essentially just get money and bounce.
Okay, so here's, I appreciate that heads up and that catch up.
Mm.
My thing is this. That 1967 win was great at the time, but the way fans go on about it, it reminds me of England winning the 1966 World Cup.
I agree. 100%. 100%. Yeah.
And
living in the past.
There's that element, but I mean, England, I think the three of us are going to agree, they're not winning Euro. They're not. Whereas the Leafs, from what I've read, they could have won the Stanley Cup. Could have been where Montreal are now against Las Vegas. Maybe the winning records would have changed who played who, but anyway, they had the team to win the Stanley Cup. You would disagree if, but I feel like you would agree that they could have won the Stanley Cup.
Mm. Like my dad said, Toronto Maple Leaf is the most winning Stanley Cup team on paper.
Well, yeah, they were favored. They were favored.
Now, are they favored because, is it like a New York Yankees situation where they're favored because of the market and the fact that they're a big name? Or is it because they're generally the better team?
So this is what Matt Cause was discussing too, and I'm glad you brought this up. The Leafs' margin of error is so small. So when everyone's guns a-blazing and firing, they're the most dominant team up and down the ice, offensively, defensively. But if one of those major components dips, so let's say Tavares, Matthews, Marner, whatever, you feel it through the whole lineup. And that's what makes them such an easy team to crack. Unfortunately, it's not like you can shut down Matthews and Marner, but then you have Tavares and Nylander. You know what I mean? But if you take Tavares out like he was taken out, it's going to be a lot harder for the Leafs to keep going on all cylinders if one of their fourth lines or third line don't step up. And that's what wins you championships, is your third and fourth line.
Yeah, but that being said, Vegas doesn't post odds lightly. There's a lot of what goes into factoring out those odds. And when you come out as the favored to win, it's because you're supposed to win.
Correct.
Vegas is also factoring in that the Leafs have a tendency to fall short. So even with that factored into the odds, these guys tend to choke.
Which is why I bet on Montreal to win the series, and it paid off lucrative.
Yeah, but they still had the Leafs favored. So Nee's right when he says they should have won the Stanley Cup. They had the team to win the Stanley Cup.
Yes. It's easy to break them. It's one of those guys. It's like they have, it's a UFC fighter with a weak chin. You're like, oh, you're so dominant, but I've punched you hard enough in the chin. You're like, oh, okay, you're down.
But that's not a champion. That's not a championship trait. A team that's easily broken down. You should not be up three in a series and lose that series 4-3.
As I said, on paper, they're great. Like, statistically, on paper, they should be a championship team. But they're nowhere near where they need to be on a championship level.
Nee, does Australia have a comparable team?
A team that is highly has a history, highly rated, but doesn't win.
Correct.
I mean, you could say the national rugby team nowadays, the Wallabies.
So when's their last championship?
Last World Cup they won was 1999.
Okay, so that's not that far off. But you're saying they're heavily favored every time.
Not heavily favored. I mean, they could have won it. I mean, New Zealand has the best record in world rugby, right? They have the best record in world sport. I think their winning rate is 70% or something like that. So Australia's always underdog to them. But 2015, as the tournament went on, they were seen as a team that could win. Team that is like the Leafs. Let's see.
I know it's a difficult question because there's so few that are like that.
We're amazingly bad.
No, it's hard to find a team that's, I mean, the New York Yankees would potentially be in that conversation, but they won in 2009. So,
correct.
Although with the team they've got, they should have won at least one in the last 10 years. Team that's like the Leafs.
Like the humming.
It's brutal. It's brutal.
I just don't know how fans can keep putting themselves through that willingly.
Okay, so I have a bit of, like, I suffer a bit because of being a fan of the Netherlands in soccer. Because they should have had a World Cup. They haven't got one. Their last win was the Euro, basically their only win. Yeah, was the Euro. That's quite a while back. They've had phenomenal players since then and not hoisted a trophy. But I still don't compare them to the Leafs because as great as they've been, I don't think they were super favorites going into a lot of those following events like the Leafs were. But of course you're gonna be a fan of your team. I just think what you're questioning is how do the fans stay so dedicated with so much failure?
Yeah, I think if this was in England, fans would have been protesting outside of the arena, you know, asking questions.
So again, I think a lot of it goes back to the corporate interest in the Leafs, the long-standing ticket holders for the Leafs. I have some friends that are dedicated Leafs fans, right? They're dedicated. And they freely admit to me that, you know what? I like seeing Leafs games elsewhere.
Yeah.
They'd rather watch the Leafs live at someone else's stadium.
So they'd rather watch the Leafs lose away from home.
Correct. Because the fans, the majority of the fans in Toronto aren't really that interested in the game. Right? It's a corporate perk.
You're correct.
It's something you do to schmooze a client. It's a great place to sit down with the guys from work and have a couple of drinks and kick back. And who cares what's happening, but you're there. So it doesn't have that same feel that some of the other stadiums have when the majority of the fans are there to really root on their team. The atmosphere here in Toronto is not the same. And I literally have dedicated Leafs fans that are like, yeah, I mean, I go because I'm a dedicated fan, but I far prefer to watch them somewhere else.
Buffalo, mainly.
So that tells you a lot, right?
Yep. So I love Reddit for this reason. I typed in, I was like, teams that are like the Leafs in terms of like hype and fan base and stuff. And Reddit gave me a bunch of options. And a lot of people were talking about it. One guy said, he's like, the New York Knicks. And he's like, just drink that in. He's like, they're kind of the same thing. Haven't won in a while. And they have a dedicated fan base that thinks they're amazing. Fair enough.
Hold on. That's a bit delusional, though. Because they're not amazing.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know.
And
yeah, they're not. Yeah.
Also, ownership doesn't care. James Dolan doesn't care about the Knicks.
Well, that's like Ballard. Ballard didn't care, right? That's what I was just kind of telling you about.
Right. So,
okay. Who's their next one? I kind of want to follow.
And this guy's from Australia, too. South Sydney Rabbitohs, the Aussie rugby.
Yeah.
One of two remaining funding teams, over 100 years old, very successful until the early 70s, broke a 40-plus year premiership drought in 2014. Before that, win with the Parallels were amazing.
Yeah, look, it did come to mind, the South Sydney Rabbitohs. Theirs is an interesting one. Because
are they well funded?
They weren't. They're actually booted out of the league because of finances in the 90s. It was a petition that got them back into the league a few years later. So that's why it was interesting for me. But yes, they do have that rich history from before in the 50s and 60s. And then, yeah, it was a dry run until 2014.
And then the next thing this guy said was Melbourne in AFL. Haven't won it all in 50 years and over 150 years old. One of the founding teams again, but been fairly irrelevant for a long time. Never good, never terrible. Consistently middle of the pack. Although they had money troubles a few years ago, the team is back to making money and not winning anything, kind of like Arsenal. There are also tanking scandals about 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. They are a team that they nearly had to merge with another club at the end of the millennium, end of the century, but they were saved. So they're a team that's consistently mediocre. They have been on the come up recently. They've been making the finals. So they're not a team that you ever expect to win the premiership, though. They haven't been to a grand final since 2001. Yeah, they're mediocre.
So basically these guys are, they're trying to make comparisons, but they're falling short in each one.
Is this one or two traits that are just off from the Leafs?
That's right. The Leafs are a perfect storm of failure. It is, right? They're well funded. They're in a major market. They're one of the founding teams. They have a rich history. Their roster is stacked, but they can't win.
I mean, Arsenal is heading down that path. Well, okay, the roster isn't, the squad isn't stacked, but the other attributes are similar. Rich history, founding team, good supporter base, strong corporate backing, at least with the season tickets, but not successful, underachieving.
I guess, yeah. It's a more of a new thing with Arsenal.
Yeah. But Arsenal could be...
Right? It's still young in the process, but you could see them going down the same route that the Leafs have gone down.
Yeah, 20 to 30 years from now, Arsenal could be there.
That's right. If they don't do something, they could be that also-ran. That looks fantastic on paper, but achieves nothing.
But in saying that, I bring that up because the fans won't stand for it. they protested this year, and if things get worse, there'll be more protests. Whereas here in Toronto, it's just, it's almost accepted. This idea of there's always next year's, it's mantra, the Leafs. It's almost...
Yeah, it's true. It's there was a time, I can't even think what the... I guess I'm looking at late 90s or whatever, early 2000s. There was a time where it was almost like every single offseason, the Leafs would acquire an aging veteran to sort of soothe the minds of the fans. You know, it's like, sorry about last year, but hey, look, we went out and got an aging Lindros.
They did that this year with Simmons, Spezza, and Thornton.
But I mean, that's, it was kind of like their thing, right? It was, we'll get somebody at the end of their career.
Right.
And it's a recognizable name that everyone knows. So it looks good, but in reality, doesn't really achieve much. Mm. It's just enough to keep them from, you know, setting fire to the to the stadium. And they got away with it time and time and time again. I think the difference now is that the team is stacked with youth as well. So you expect more.
Yeah, there's draft picks, you know. They want to get a return on the investment there.
And the flip of the side of the coin, the good thing about it is that they are competitive for the majority of the season. They're not like a dumpster fire like Buffalo.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram at pro.sports.podcasters for the most current sports news. Now back to the show.
So here's the thing. The Leafs are a great, how do I put this, season team, but they're not a great playoff team, as we've mentioned and discussed.
Yeah, if you have season tickets and you go to every game, you get to see them win more often.
Right.
Right? You're happy because you leave because they won.
So Kyle Dubas did this one thing with the, before he left the Marlies and went up to the Leafs. When you're a GM, you technically, whatever you do kind of resonates for the next year or two, just for players, contracts, and whatever, right? It's not an immediate kind of, you take over, but there's a few things you still have to iron out from the previous person. So when he left the Marlies, they had won that year. But what he had did was, anybody knew that they got from the draft, he obviously put them in like the ECHL, because this is tier 2, right? So he put them in like tier 3. But any major club in Europe or whatever it is that were like, yeah, tier 1, for instance, they're like, yeah, we'll sign your player. They're like, really? Please take him. So he would loan them out to essentially like Germany, Sweden, Czech, whatever it is, for them to get tier 1 experience and then bring him back, which is the team that helped win in the Calder Cup that year. Because they were all, although they were technically never NHL players, they did have first line experience over in a tier 1 division, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they were young veterans, which is like a nickname for them. And that's what the Leafs did just this offseason for the last 2 years. They signed away a bunch of their players to Sweden, to Switzerland, whatever it is. And they've played 2 years there, 3 years there, and now they're signing them to the Leafs officially. So that's what two or three of their signings have been already, has been like forwards and defenders who have played over in Europe, which is the first time it's happening in that abundance. It's usually maybe just one player, but they're bringing in three, which is interesting to see. I'm not saying it's going to help them. I'm just definitely interested to see the dynamic.
Do you think the Leafs are going to lose anyone in the expansion draft?
Oh, Nylander's gone for sure. Nylander's out. Like I would bet money. I would bet a poutine bet right now that Nylander is not staying with the Leafs.
I don't know enough, so I'm not going to take that bet.
Now, Justin, how does a team not win a playoff series since 2004?
Through sheer talent. It's like I said, it's a combination of things. It's pathetic is what it is, and there's no real excuse. I can't pinpoint one thing. I would have to go through every playoff series and be like, here's where they faulted here. For the while, it was defense. For the longest time, it was defense. But this year is the first year where offense did sweet fuck all. Sweet, sweet poop all. Like Matthews and Marner together got 1 point. Kobe, Nee, and myself had the same amount of goals as Marner in this series. And I don't know about you guys, I'm still waiting for my $10 million check.
Well, we talked with Steve Mears, and he actually blamed goaltending as the number one reason why a team doesn't move on.
Which is true. You've seen Gary Price.
But we've had goaltending since 2004, correct?
We've had goaltenders.
No, but we haven't had any top-level goaltenders?
No, Anderson was never top-level. I'd say he's top 10, maybe. But that means you want top three at best.
But top 10 should at least get you past the first round of the playoffs.
But that's what I'm saying. That's when the defense faltered. If a top 10 goalie, you need at least a decent defense to make him appear to be a top five. You know what I mean? But if you have no defense and a top 10 goalie, all right, cool. I'm going to draw you a roadmap to my net. Call me when you're done.
Hold on. By your calculations, you're saying Nylander's gone, and he's quite the playmaker.
He is, which is why I'm going to be sad to see him go. Also, Anderson's going. He's not coming back.
Okay, so then what would you prioritize? If you were the GM of the Leafs, what would you be after this offseason?
Well, okay, so also the cap went down by $5 million.
Okay.
That's already stressful. It went from 87 to 82. Prioritizing, it would be trying to sign Hyman, but I don't know if we're going to. And if we can't sign Hyman for what he wants, Hyman has been a consistent player and he deserves $5 million a year. I just don't think we can give it to him. So we're probably going to say goodbye to him.
It's funny. I actually had that conversation with Manny the other day.
Okay.
Because he's one of these Leafs faithful.
Oh my God.
And he thinks Hyman deserves six.
Yeah, I would agree. Six, five, somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah.
But that the Leafs can only afford four.
Correct.
And they're going to hope on the fact that his whole family's here, his wife's family's here. He took a discount last time, but Manny doesn't see that happening. And because he'll be entering the free agent market, he doesn't believe any sort of deal will get done. They won't protect him, that he's gone. He's elsewhere.
Right. So here's where a lot of things are going to go awry. You have the Kraken coming in. Awesome. Cool. You're allowed to protect, if I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. Last time you were allowed to protect one player. Or one to three players, I think, and they had an entry level count. So all your entry level players, which is why Matthews and Marner weren't touched. Nylander was protected, and I think Anderson was protected.
Okay.
Now, Anderson's contract is up. He's at $5.5 million. The cap, like I said, went down $5 million. So, and he wasn't even starting for us anymore. Jack Campbell was. All right, cool. Anderson, thanks for what you did, but deuces. Unless you're going to take a huge discount and play for $75,000.
And Campbell's cheap, right?
Campbell is sweetly cheap.
Okay.
But he's also littered with injuries, so you have to keep that in mind too. But we do have a good backup in Rydryk. So we've got the goalie situation relatively taken care of. Fine. Hyman's situation, he wants to get paid. He deserves to get paid. Can we pay him? No. Unless Dubas pulls something out of his magic hat again, like he did with Nylander. People were freaking out. They're like, oh, you paid him $6 million a year. That's when you average it out, right, for 3 years. Nylander got his money. He got 80% of his money his first year. He's been a financial freebird for us for the past 2 years, which is great. It was a very front-end loaded contract,
okay,
which people tend to forget that. And it's like, okay, yes, cool. But we took that hit just as we also signed Tavares, which Tavares we didn't need to sign, but we did just to prove we could do it, which I kind of don't regret, but kind of regret some days. Anyways, so I think what we need to do in that point for when everything expands is we need to protect Marner. We need to protect Matthew because those two are the face of our franchise, right? We're going to take those two. Nylander, I don't think we're going to protect, but I also can see him moving. He did produce a lot during the playoffs, but during the regular season, he was kind of there. So he's definitely a good playoff guy, and he's proven himself the past little bit. Marner hasn't been since the Boston series. He hasn't done much in the playoffs, like 15 points maybe in 21-ish games. That's okay, but if you're a star athlete, I expect a lot more points, especially if you're assisting, not even playmaking, but either way. So Marner's, again, great regular season player, not so much good when it comes to the postseason. Matthews is typically great both ways. This one, he just dumped the puck and failed horribly. So yeah, at this point, I would just try to lose Nylander, I guess, make more cap space and try to get an excellent defender. That's all you can do.
Okay, so to end this portion, let's make a way too early prediction, Justin. Do the Leafs win a playoff series next season?
Oh, sweet Jesus. With the roster I'm imagining, so no Hyman, no Nylander, and just an average player, like I'm going to go B-minus, C-plus player. Yes, I will see them winning a playoff, but I don't see them winning a championship.
There you go, Nee.
Now, Justin, do you think the Leafs need to bring in some sort of, not physical, but let's say some sort of mental coaching?
They need mental coaching and they need somebody in the back line who can hit.
Yeah, so some sort of psychological training, I guess. I feel like there's more to it than just talent on the ice when it comes to the Leafs.
Yeah, it's the pressure. And the media pressure is insane in Toronto. Like, there have been players who flat out said when they left Toronto. Like, okay, so for example, most recently, Cody Ceci. He was a defender for Toronto for a year. We tore him apart. We got him from Ottawa. We're like, this guy sucks. He is having the game of his career over in Pittsburgh. We discussed this. And Mears said the reason why is because he gets to just be a player. He's not in the spotlight. And he's come out and said that. The media is something they don't teach you to deal with in Toronto, right? Like, in Toronto, we're the only team that we will tell you the stats of our third line center's face-off winning percentages. Who in the fiddler's hell needs that information? I don't know, but we have it. Why? That's useless information. We're adding pressure we don't need, right? Every year that ticks by, we don't do well. We should add less media coverage.
Hold on, though. I got to agree with Nian that there are other teams that have a lot of pressure from media and they still succeed.
The Yankees.
That's one. Manchester United.
Yep.
Oh, yes, yes. No, I agree. I agree.
The New Zealand All Blacks.
But do they have sports psychologists? Like, genuine question.
Like, I don't know. I don't know.
I believe some teams, I'm pretty sure the All Blacks did bring in someone when they lost in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were in a similar position to the Leafs, right? They had a great, great teams throughout the 90s and 2000s. Mm-hmm. But after winning the World Cup in 1987, they didn't win for a stretch. It was not until 2011 that they won again. And yeah, they had this intense pressure at home. And they also had expectation from the fans. Yet they still had this great team that couldn't get it done at that tournament. So I believe there was some sports psychologist that came in to help them.
Right.
Maybe that got them over the hump. Maybe it was playing at home. But who knows? They got over the hump in the end.
So Jack Campbell, if you guys remember, used to blame every loss on himself. He's like, oh, I wasn't good enough, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's all me. To the point where he actually got a sports psychologist and improved his game and his just mental prowess so much more. Like, when he lost again, he was like, you know, I gave it everything I had. And it was just, you know, sometimes the puck hits, like, you can't control it. Like, some of those shots were going one way, but it just deflects off someone's stick and goes the other. And Nina's like, you know, I'm not the Flash. I can do my best, but that's all I can do. And he's like, I felt like I did my best. And he was better. He was more comfortable in net. I think everyone in the Leafs should meet with a sports psychologist and, like, constantly, just like clockwork.
And keep in mind, though, there are people who are very resistant to that idea.
Yeah.
Because essentially you're telling them, we think you're a great player and you've got great skills and we're paying you millions of dollars to be here, but mentally you're weak.
So that's a very interesting point you raise, Cope, because that, I think, that's part of a wider issue, you know? On one thing, a player is not going to be perfect when they come out of the minors, when they come out of the draft. So it should always be, there's always room for improvement, right?
Of course.
That, and then I guess this social stigma that we have towards, you know, getting assistance on that level, that's problematic as well.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's rooted, because we have no issue working out, training every other part of our body.
Right. Everyone wants to be in the gym, but no one wants to get,
mentally tough.
Yeah, mental toughness. That's frowned upon for whatever reason.
Because you're supposed to assume to have already had it to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's like mm-hmm. I made it here. I'm in the NHL. How many people get to say that? How many people went through what I went through to get here? Obviously, I've got the mental fortitude to do what needs to be done, but it isn't necessarily the case when you're at the top level. And I think that's a lot of it goes back to the stigma, right?
Mm.
It's a lot of these guys grew up in a time where it was frowned upon to admit that, you know, maybe I need some mental assistance.
Correct.
Mm.
But I think that's changing.
Slowly. Slowly but surely. And I know May was Mental Health Month, and I think we just had Men's Health Week, so it's come up again. But I guess it needs to stay in the conversation more often.
Mm-hmm.
Really glad you brought it up, Nia. I think it's something that maybe we should ask some of our future guests about, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That'd be a great topic, yeah.
Have they had any sort of coaching in that kind of aspect, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not something you think of off the top of your head. I mean, again, because it's been so kind of pushed aside and hidden. Mm-hmm. It's not something I just sort of think about when I'm talking to someone, but it would be an interesting to ask people who have succeeded certain levels. Hey, have you ever had any sort of mental coaching or mental conditioning?
I mean, I guess we've got to shout out the WSA, the Women's Sports Alliance over in the UK. They organized a chat with Fran Kirby, the Chelsea and England and Great Britain striker. And she was talking about how she was getting therapy for she'd had a family bereavement and that it affected her game. But she got the therapy to, I guess, that helped her to go to another level. Because, yeah, she was being extra hard on herself with her performance. But after getting that coaching or that therapy, whatever you want to call it, she was able to, like you said, it was more about doing her best on the field of play rather than bashing herself if she missed a shot or something like that.
Yeah, and that's interesting. So basically, she sought out the therapy originally to handle a bereavement she was having a hard time processing, but then got the ancillary benefit of becoming a better player as a result of having it.
Right.
And that wasn't the original intention. So, I mean, that's sort of a lucky strike, so to speak, no pun intended.
Oh.
Right? Mm. But yeah, I mean, it's more likely an athlete does go seek out therapy because of something unrelated to the sport. Mm. Because they already excel at it, not realizing that there's the potential of even being greater if they have that mental fortitude.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's a good point, Nate. It's a very good point. And it'd be interesting to talk to somebody in the Maple Leafs organization to see if that's ever been a consideration.
I wonder if we can even grab a sports psychologist or a sports therapist.
Yeah, I'm sure we can make it happen.
That would be a nice interview.
Mm. I'm guessing you just can't ask them about their former clients.
Right. That's
probably not.
Right.
It'd have to be on a generalized nature.
That's right.
They'd be like, yeah. They can probably tell you the sport that they do or they favor or whatever.
Yeah, use like, some false names like Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, so I had a Mickey Mouse and this Mickey Mouse played had baseball. Won many championships. Yeah, exactly. I'd be like, please use Disney characters.
I actually think baseball is one of the sports that it's been utilized the most because of the nature of the sport.
Yeah, right. It's a sport where 3 out of 10 is considered elite.
That's right. You fail far more often than you succeed.
Mm, and you have to do it almost every night of the week. So, yeah, you have to almost wipe away whatever happened the day before and reset.
You know, this is a great conversation, gentlemen.
Mm, I think so.
Considering where it started and where it ended, I'm going to be using the last part of this conversation.
Yeah.
That's important. That's what I'm going to be using. Anything I find out that if I get from the beginning, I'll just use as clips for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think this whole look into the Maple Leafs and the psychology of losing is pretty interesting.
That's right.
If you have any questions for the Pro Sports Podcasters, be sure to reach us on our Twitter account, where you can also
slide into our DMs
and catch the latest snippets, dirt, and other exclusive things that we will tweet.
Check us out at P Podcasters on Twitter.